The letter sat against her hip, a hard rectangle beneath the thin cotton of her apron. Concetta stood in the doorway of La Posta and listened to the building settle. It was 7:30, and the air inside was already thick, heavy with the smell of damp paper and stale tobacco that clung to the walls like a second skin. Dust motes drifted through the shafts of morning light that cut across the sorting table, illuminating the scars on the wood where decades of stamps and seals had been pressed into the grain. She should have left it at home. She could have walked past the post office, gone straight to Casa Marino, boiled the water for coffee, and waited for the day to unfold in its usual, predictable rhythm. But the letter demanded to be seen. Or perhaps it was the opposite, it demanded to be hidden, and the only place safe enough was the one place everyone assumed was empty until the mail truck arrived. Concetta stepped inside. The door clicked shut behind her, a small sound that seemed too loud in the stillness. She pulled off her gloves, one finger at a time, and folded them neatly in her pocket. Her hands were cold. She rubbed them together, feeling the calluses on her palms, the roughness that came from handling paper all her life. Paper that carried words, paper that lied. She walked to the sorting table. Her fingers traced the edge of the wood, finding the groove where she always placed her keys. The groove was worn smooth, a tiny riverbed carved by years of repetition. She looked at the three sacks waiting by the door, their canvas covers stained with salt and rain. 3, 4, 5. The driver would count them later, as he always did, and nod once before driving away. But today, the sacks looked different. They looked like containers for secrets. Concetta reached into her apron pocket and touched the letter again. The envelope was rough, the paper cheap. She had not opened it fully just enough to read the date, the impossible date, the name that should not have been there. Andrea Marino, deceased, but alive, alive in Marseille. She closed her eyes. The heat was already rising, pressing against the windows, warming the glass until it was almost too hot to touch. She could feel the summer coming, the long, humid days that would stretch out before her like a sentence she had to endure. And underneath it all, the letter. The weight of it against her hip, heavier than lead, heavier than stone. The bell above the door rang. Concetta jerked her head up, her heart hammering against her ribs. She turned slowly, forcing her face into the mask of routine, the expression she wore for every customer who walked through the door. It was Signora Bellani. Her husband had been gone to Libya for 3 years now, or dead, or neither, and Concetta never knew which. Signora Bellani carried a small parcel wrapped in brown paper, her fingers stained with ink. "Buongiorno, Concetta," Signora Bellani said. Her voice was thin, reedy, like paper tearing. "Buongiorno, Signora," Concetta replied. She kept her hands flat on the sorting table, resisting the urge to touch her pocket. "What can I do for you?" Signora Bellani placed the parcel on the counter. It was light, barely more than a handful of letters tied together with string. "For my son," she said. "He writes every week, sometimes twice. I wait for the postman, and I watch the road, and I hope." Concetta picked up the parcel. Her fingers brushed the string, the rough twine that held the letters together. She could feel the thickness of the paper inside, the weight of words sent across distances. Libya. It was a place she could not map, a land beyond the reach of her known world. She had never been there. She had never left the village. "I will sort it today," she said. "It will be ready by 11. Signora Bellani nodded. She did not look at Concetta's face. She looked at the parcel, at the string, at the promise of words. "Thank you," she said. Then she turned and left, the bell ringing again, the door clicking shut. Concetta stood alone in the post office. The silence rushed back in, filling the space where Signora Bellani had stood. She looked down at the parcel in her hands, two letters, maybe three. She untied the string, her fingers moving automatically, practiced, efficient. She separated the letters, placing them in the center of the sorting table, the designated space for postcards and short notes. But her mind was not on the letters. It was on the envelope in her pocket, Andrea's handwriting. She knew it instantly, even without seeing it. The slant of the letters, the way the A curved like a hook, the pressure of the pen on the page. She had seen it every day for 10 years, on grocery lists and birthday cards and the occasional postcard from the front. And now it was here, in Marseille, in 1950. She picked up one of Signora Bellini's letters. The paper was thin, the ink faded. She did not open it. She did not need to. She could feel the words inside, the stories of a son's life, the updates on health and weather, and the price of bread. She placed it back on the table and reached for the next. The mail truck arrived at 8:30. Concetta heard the engine before she saw it, a low rumble that vibrated through the floorboards, through the soles of her shoes. She walked to the window and watched the truck pull up outside, the driver climbing out, his uniform stained with grease and salt. He carried the sacks inside, setting them on the floor with a thud that shook the dust from the shelves. "Morning, Concetta," he said. He did not look at her face, he never did. He looked at the sacks, at the count, at the work. "Morning," she said. He counted the sacks, 3, 4, 5. He nodded once, as he always did, and turned to leave. Concetta watched him go through the window, watching the truck drive away, disappearing around the corner of the street. Then she turned back to the room. The sorting table was covered in mail. Letters, parcels, postcards, hundreds of pieces of paper, each one carrying a piece of someone's life. She began to sort, her hands moving quickly, efficiently, automatically. Letters to the right, parcels to the left, postcards to the center. The rhythm was familiar, comforting, a liturgy she had performed every day for 20 years. But today, the rhythm was broken. Every time she picked up a piece of correspondence, she felt the weight in her pocket. Every time she placed a piece of correspondence in its pile, she wondered if it was from Andrea. Was it? Could it be? The impossibility of it was a knot in her throat, tight and painful. She reached for a letter addressed to the schoolmaster. The handwriting was neat, precise. She placed it in the right pile. She reached for another, addressed to the baker. Neat, precise, right pile. She reached for a third, addressed to the harbor master. Neat, precise, right pile. Her hands were shaking. She pressed them flat against the table, feeling the rough wood beneath her palms, the scars, the grooves. She waited for the shaking to stop. It did not stop. It never stopped. At 10 o'clock, the first customer arrived. It was Luca, Andrea's eldest son. He was 19 now, tall and lean, with his father's dark hair and his mother's sharp eyes. He carried a small bag over his shoulder, his posture cynical, his expression quick-witted. He walked to the counter and leaned against it, watching Concetta sort. "Anything for me?" he asked. His voice was rough, unused. Concetta shook her head. "No, Luca, nothing today." He sighed. "Disappointing. I was hoping for something from Palermo, or Rome, somewhere far away." Concetta looked at him. She saw the restlessness in his posture, the desire to leave that she recognized because she felt it too. "The mail comes when it comes," she said. "You cannot rush it." Luca smiled, but it was not a happy smile. "I know. I'm just waiting, like everyone else." He pushed off the counter and turned to leave. At the door, he stopped. "Concetta." She looked up. "Yes, Luca." "Are you all right? You look pale." She touched her pocket instinctively, then forced her hand back to the table. "I'm fine," she said. "Just the heat. It's early, but it's already hot." Luca studied her for a moment, his eyes narrowing. Then he nodded. "Right, well, see you tomorrow." He left, the bell rang, the door clicked shut. The post office felt hollowed out, the absence of Luca leaving a draft that chilled the back of Concetta's neck. She stared at the sorting table, where the day's mail lay in disarray, letters fanned right, parcels stacked left, postcards resting in the center. Among the clutter sat the envelope from Andrea, its existence defying the date on the stamp and the silence of the room. She reached into her pocket and pulled it out. The envelope was rough, the paper cheap. She held it in her hands, feeling the weight of it, the texture of the paper against her fingertips. She looked at the name. Andrea Marino, deceased, but alive, alive in Marseille. She shut her eyes against the glare. The afternoon light had lengthened, stretching across the wooden floorboards and lifting the dust motes into a slow, suspended dance. The post office settled into its familiar rhythm, the low hum of the street outside filtering through the glass. But the stillness here was absolute, pressing against her ears. It was the quiet of a room where a secret had just been kept. She put the letter back in her pocket. She finished sorting the mail. She locked the door at 11, as she always did. But today, the click of the lock sounded wrong, like a bone snapping. She stood in the dimming post office, her palm flat against the wooden door, listening to the hum of the village outside. The shelves held their thousands of letters, their unspoken truths, their quiet betrayals. And she stood in the center of it all, a woman who had spent her life sorting other people's words, now trapped by the one she could not read. Outside, a dog barked. Somewhere, a kettle whistled. The world continued, indifferent to her terror.